though it's being challenged at every step by a coalition of environmentalists and fishermen. COVID-19 has hit the whole seafood industry hard, particularly branded fish like Kona Kampachi, which is targeted to the white tablecloth and sushi markets. But Sims and his team continue to fine-tune Kona Kampachi production along with their other efforts while keeping separate research teams in their coronavirus bubbles. When I find him, he is hunched over his computer at the world headquarters of Ocean Era, a musty one-room office with a scuffed-up carpet and a wall filled with 15-year-old newspaper clippings. "Guilt-free fish farming arrives," reads one from the Seattle Times. An Australian in his 60s, Sims offers me a cup of tea and turns off a dehumidifier rumbling under a marked-up whiteboard. The building is cooled by seawater piped in from 914 meters below the ocean's surface, which is great for energy efficiency, but only adds to the tropical humidity. Like many aquaculture evangelists, Sims came to fish farming after growing jaded at the state of the world's fisheries. "I've seen enough out there in the ocean to put my hair on end," he tells me. After getting a marine biology degree in the 1980s, he joined the Australian Volunteers Program, sort of the Peace Corps down under, and landed in the Cook Islands, where he taught science classes. Sims had the restlessness gene that so many Australians I've met possess. After bumming around the United States and Mexico for 5 months, he returned to the Cooks at the age of 23 and told the Marine Resources Minister he was willing to work for food and scuba tank fills. "Excellent," the minister replied. Sims would lead the country's fisheries research. Sims was eager to improve the livelihoods of the 17,500 citizens spread over 15 islands, many of whom depended on traditional fisheries practices. Palmerston Atoll had a small but sustainable parrotfish fishery. Locals would create barriers out of coconut fronds and drag them across the reef to corral several thousand kilograms of fish, just enough to fill the hold of a 17-meter ice boat that came through every 3 to 4 months. Development happened, as it does in such places, with a bang. An ambitious islander got himself a blast freezer and a vacuum packer. Restaurants in the capital of Avarua on the island of Rarotonga couldn't get enough of his high-grade fillets. Sims needed to see what was going on. "By the time we got our research team out to the island," he says, "the fishery was over. The parrotfish were gone." Experiences like that got Sims brainstorming about ways to rebuild marine stocks to benefit locals. The South Seas used to be famous for its pearl industry, but the oysters had largely been cleaned out in the 1950s. He set up a research program to monitor oyster populations and started evaluating the growth of farmed oysters that had been collected as larvae, known as spat. He also played around with relocating spat to marine reserves and areas where populations had been depleted, though those efforts were unsuccessful. By the time his stint in the Cook Islands came to an end, Sims understood that to build a pearl industry and keep it viable long term, workers needed access to commercially produced spat they could use to seed their farms. With a grant from the United States National Science Foundation, he and another marine biologist, Dale Sarver, tried to produce black-lip pearl oyster hatchery spat in Hawaii. They were successful enough that they started a company together. But before long, they had fallen behind Chinese businesses that were producing pearls from freshwater mussels and doing it cheaper than Sims and Sarver ever could. Meanwhile, they watched with horror as the world's great fisheries, like North Atlantic cod and Mediterranean bluefin tuna, were collapsing. It felt like we were playing in trinkets and